We've been looking at and trying to find out just why the five Pandava brothers and the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, there was such enmity even from the earliest days. And we got to the situation where Pandu, the father of the Pandava brothers, had virtually retired to the forest. He came under a curse, and after that he took on various austerities and joined the hermits and seers. And it was during that period that the five Pandava brothers were born, and shortly after that he fell foul of the curse and he died. Of his two wives, Kunti and Madri, Kunti was the senior wife, and she was pretty quick to point that out to Madri, and therefore by Dharma, by the law, she should be able to enter the pyre with her husband and pass on with him. But Madri also wanted to have the privilege of being with her husband in the next world. And it was during this discussion, I call it discussion, during this talk with the two together, that in fact Kunti referred to Madri as a Bactrian woman. A couple of seemingly pretty innocent words. But in actual fact, it had a lot more meaning to it. Because Madri came from the nation of the Madras, and adjoining them were the Balikas, with that reference of Bactrian. And they were right up in the northwest, where now Pakistan and Afghanistan live. They were nations with really low standing. In fact, Madri, Bhishma went and collected her as a second wife for Pandu, and he had to pay quite a lot of money for her. But Kunti, it was a different affair. She was really more of an upper class, and there's a big procession and all sorts of goods, dowries, elephants and riches and gems and servants and cloths. All that lot came with her. So she had a high status. So in many ways, by referring to Madri as the Bactrian woman, it was a bit abusive. But Madri was pretty quick off the mark too. She pointed out that in fact she was the last one to see Pandu when he was smiling and happy, and she was concerned that she would not be able to treat her sons, Nakula Sahadeva, so fairly as Kunti's three sons. And also she pointed out that if she were to bring up all of the five sons, then in fact, because she was a junior wife, they would have lower status than if Kunti herself brought them up. And Kunti, if you like, bowed or was tactically outmaneuvered on that one and agreed to take on the motherhood of the five sons. And as a parting words from Madri before she entered the burning pyre was, would Kunti please look after them, that's Nakula Sahadeva, and treat them as in fact as if they were born of her. Although last rites did take place and there was a cremation, it wasn't a full one because the two bodies were later taken down to Hastinapura, the city of the elephant. And shortly after this small cremation, the seers and the hermits got together and they determined really what was the best thing to do with Kunti and the children. They said that in actual fact, they should go down and be looked after by Bhishma and by Dhritarashtra. So they got their things together and putting the children at the front with Kunti behind, they all set off towards Hastinapura. And after about 17 days, they came to the forest just outside the city. And in the early hours of the morning, around about sunrise, they entered the city itself. With them was a whole lot of hermits and seers. There were Charanas, there were and seers and other demigods. A great crowd had come to meet them at the gate, and they were pretty quiet, but there were all classes. There were the serfs and the working folk, there were kshatriyas, there were cartloads of people, chariots, lots of women came as well, and of course the royal household came. There was Bhishma, Vidura, Kausalya, that's another name for Ambalika, the wife. And then Gandhi, of course, and of course the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra that was led in, the Duryodhana. When the whole crowd saw the seers and the holy men, they bowed their heads and they all sat down around the group that had arrived. And Bhishma went through the normal sort of formalities you do when you're honoured by a visit of the Brahmins and the seers and so forth. He offered the kingdom. of the kingship and then the kingdom to them, a formality, rather like washing feet and things like that. And then the oldest seer got up. He had plaited hair and he had deer skins, and he said that there should be a welcoming rites performed for the sons. He introduced them all, he gave them all the names, the sons of the Pandavas, and he explained how they'd actually had been born the sons of the various deities. And he said after the welcoming rites had been completed, then the funeral rites of Pandu should be completed. And at that, suddenly they disappeared. And the people all sitting around looked around, and suddenly all these seers, all these holy men, the Charanas and the Siddhas, had all gone. The blind king, Dhritarashtra, immediately gave instructions to Vidura to get the final rites underway. So a bier was found to place the bodies on, Madri and Pandu. They were anointed with perfumes and sandalwood and other oils. They were garlanded, they were dressed, and they were wrapped around with white cotton, and they were drawn towards a woodland just outside the city. And on the way there, there were musical instruments playing all around them, and the people who were taking the bier, who were pushing along the bier, were handing out jewels and gems and things to the poor folk that were along the way there. And then right at the front was the fire, a fire burning in a big cauldron that was taken along. And when they arrived at a flat place on a corner of a woodland by the bank of the Ganges, they performed the various rites. Water was offered by all the people there, and then lots of ghee was put on the flaming cauldrons, and the ceremony was completed. And after that, there was 12 days of mourning, and then the actual Pandava brothers took over the house that their father used to live in. But just before this, and just after the Shraddhas, the death rites of Pandu, Vyasa came to his mother Satyavati and said, "There are bad times ahead. The happy days are over. You should take your daughters-in-law and go to the forest and spend the end of your days there." So Satyavati went to Ambika's room and said to her that because of the misguided policies of her son, Dhritarashtra, all the Bharatas would be killed. It was a time for them to go. So both the remaining Kasi princesses, Ambika and Ambalika, with Satyavati, said farewell to Bhishma and entered the forest, where they remained for the rest of their days. The two sets of children, Pandavas and Kauravas, they played together. But pretty soon it was evident that the Pandavas excelled in everything compared with the Kauravas. They could run faster, their archery and the games they played, they were more competent, and so forth. And of course, Bhima was much bigger, much stronger than all of them. And he took it upon himself. He was a bit of a bully, I'm afraid. However many of the children would scrap with him, whole hordes would come at him, but he'd defeat them all. And he used to, he'd grab their ankles, suddenly tug at them, and they'd fall down. And then he'd get a hold of their legs and he'd drag them along so their knees were scratched and torn apart and their black eyes and things. And if they would go up climbing trees to get fruit and things like that, he used to kick the tree, so it shook the tree and all the fruit came down, but the Kaurava sons would come down as well. And when they went actually into the river to swim and things like that, he'd grab a whole bunch of them, up to 10, he'd grab them and he'd hold them under until they were just about gasping their last, and he'd let them go and up they'd pop, gasping for breath. Or he'd actually get hold of their hair and lift them up in the air. They were really, he was really the bane of their lives. But it wasn't really out of malice. It was his way and his childish way. But Duryodhana observed this, and he knew very well that none of them could do anything about the superiority of strength of Bhima. So he determined that what he would do, he'd wait his time, and then he would actually get Bhima out of the way, and then he'd be able to actually put Yudhishthira and Arjuna in prison, in irons, and he would be able to take over the kingdom when he grew up. Even at that age, he was plotting that. And how he put this into effect in several ways, round about this time when they were still young kids and before Drona came onto the scene. On one occasion, he organised water sports. They had all large tents put up all by the river frontage, and the children played around, and Bhima would give them lifts on his back and what have you, and they had a whole day of frolicking. Then they'd come in, they'd wash, and they'd put their clothes on and all the jewellery and things like that, and then they'd have a very nice meal, and they'd really lie down and sleep. Well, in this case, Bhima was very tired. He'd been playing hard with the children all the time. And as he slept, it was a very sound sleep. And Duryodhana with his brother, Dushasana, came and bound him up with creepers and pushed him over the side. There was a little cliff that over the Ganges, and pushed him over so that he would drown the Ganges. But immediately hit the water, Bhima woke up, and with his strength, immediately he broke the creepers. And on another occasion, the same sort of thing happened where Duryodhana had a whole lot of poisonous snakes put around Bhima whilst he was asleep. And as they started biting Bhima, he woke up, but they couldn't actually even puncture his skin. So he just grabbed them and killed them and so on. And one or two things like this occurred until Drona, the Brahmin, the master of weaponry, came to Hastinapura and was employed as a guru for the children. And we'll see how that went on next time. Well, if you have been listening, thanks very much.